Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. This is the third installment of the healthcare. I don't know if it's a debate, but it's something. It's
a clash.
Maybe, yeah. I think we may deviate from some of the clash on this one just to set people up, because I think as we continue on.
Hold my beer.
What's that?
Hold my beer.
Yeah, true. As we move on with the healthcare debate, we start getting into a few more specifics, and I think there's a couple types of healthcare models that we may talk, or a specific healthcare model that we'll talk about tonight, that I don't think you and I agree is a great healthcare model in itself. However, we have touched, if you haven't listened to any of the healthcare discussions that we've had, I do implore you to please go back and listen to 1 and 2. However, if you choose not to, you should be able to pick up where we sort of have left off. Well, so, oh, please go ahead.
The easy synopsis of the two polls we picked up on, and it came down to, if I'm not speaking out of turn here, that it was focused on the central premise of, is healthcare a right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you took up the position, if I'm asserting correctly here, that yes, it is. And I responded that no, it is not. However, as you eloquently and kindly put it, that doesn't mean that I don't give a damn about people.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that's a fairly good synopsis, and I think we'll move away tonight about more about the right, whether or not it's a right or it should be a constitutional amendment, and really discuss another type of healthcare model that will be thrown about and you may hear about in upcoming 2020, but maybe not, depending on who the Republican challenger to Donald Trump will be, because Donald Trump certainly will not be talking about free market healthcare. So just to jump right into it, of note and on the healthcare landscape that's coming up in relevant news, it sounds like Beto O'Rourke has thrown his hat in as a Democratic challenger, and he has a different take on healthcare. Not different, but certainly deviates from what you see through the mainstream ticket. And that is, he does believe that there should be Medicare or Medicaid for all. However, he believes that there should still be that private option. So in terms of the debate, if you've got all 1,000 of them on a debate stage, he potentially has a potential dissenting view in terms of overall Medicare or Medicaid for all. So that's something.
It's not going to be very popular with the millennial crowd of Democrats.
Well, I guess it probably just depends on how you frame it, because, again,
well, it's a standalone public option. That's not in vogue right now, left of center.
The
single payer is what's in vogue.
Yeah, well, public option. Yeah, you're right. It's the single, just straight single payer. And, you know, if he frames it right, again, a lot of people haven't got into this conversation as deeply as we have. And the idea of the fact that, hey, I'm friggin' paying for Medicare and Medicaid in every single paycheck. And what is the point of paying premiums and deductibles on top of the X amount of money that I'm dumping into this system in the first place? Like, where's my benefit? And I think people get a little disenfranchised. It's a great insurance policy on top of insurance. I mean, that's quite frankly what it is. And it becomes fairly frustrating for people. So if he can,
I think that's where some of the thinking comes from, of saying, you know what, screw it.
Yeah.
We're just going to have the whole thing regulated like a utility run by the government.
Exactly. So it isn't that, I think overall, it isn't necessarily that people hate the insurance companies. It's just, it's an extra burden on top of something that they're already paying for that they don't have access to unless they're below, they're a certain age or below a certain income bracket necessarily. So And the debate will evolve, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again after this sort of mini series that we do in healthcare, and people will be so sick and tired of us talking about healthcare, but we'll do it anyway. So,
and they've got a long year and a half ahead of them because we're not the only ones going to be doing it.
That's true. We're just getting ahead of the game here.
Well, so, there's going to be probably, if there's 1,000 Democratic candidates, as you said before, there's probably going to be 998 of them raving about healthcare.
Yeah, and it's a big ticket item. So what I wanted to deviate from, away from Medicare for all or Medicaid for all, is this idea of the free market system. And this is something we haven't really touched on. In fact, we didn't shy away from it. It was sort of irrelevant to the conversation that we were having. But it is relevant to the overall healthcare conversation and does warrant some airtime. Because it is as you move to the extreme, I think everyone recognizes that the current system that we have is ridiculous. And when you have one group going to the extreme on the left, you will ultimately have others, the counteracting force going in the opposite direction. And that namely leads us to the free market system. So you had pulled up the libertarian position on healthcare. Do you still have that in front of you?
Yes, this is the Libertarian Party's actual platform, and in section 213, I quote, "We favor a free market healthcare system. We recognize the freedom of individuals to determine the level of health insurance they want, if any, the level of healthcare they want, the care providers they want, the medicines and treatments they will use, and all other aspects of their medical care, including end-of-life decisions. People should be free to purchase health insurance across state lines," end quote.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things to break down on that. First off, the meat of that is deciding your care, the level of care that you want, your end of life, etc., is
party of principle, you know.
But it's no different from the healthcare system that we have today. Like, no one, even in a Medicare, Medicaid for all situation, you do have a right. You have to consent for procedures.
There's a big one there in the final line. People should be free to purchase health insurance across state lines.
Yeah, and so it's
not feasible, though, within the status quo, obviously, because, as we've elaborated on before, the status quo is based on people participating in that pool in that state. Mm-hmm. We'll take Louisiana, Mississippi, okay? Let's say folks in New Orleans decide, hey, Jackson, Mississippi, I can get this insurance cheaper, and they do that. Well, then that's taking money out of the pool in Louisiana, and therefore it creates an inequity.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically what they're saying is a complete, in that sense, overhaul of the status quo, as far as they would have to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. And again, it's funny because the Medicare for all system would work across state lines. The difference is that you have far fewer options, namely one option. So there's a lot of commonalities here. However, the difference is the freedom to choose. And I'm not, I am most definitely not, I think what I find is funny, because obviously libertarians, they obviously would counter the idea of taxation, because they basically think taxation is basically stealing. And to what I would say, well, look, I don't know that there's a reality on planet Earth that you're not going to pay taxes. And so you're going to pay into the system. So it more or less is, you have the choice not to have any health care. The reality is, even in, and this is broad, but the reality is if there's a free market system, I don't care how much cheaper health care gets, it isn't that you can choose not to have health insurance, you just won't be able to afford it at all. I mean, let's just look at the maintenance of a vehicle. Like, that's expensive. And you're living on another planet, especially as a libertarian. You're living on another planet if you think that healthcare is going to be cheaper than maintaining your car in a free market model. So there's already proposals. For example, I think it's Kansas is proposing it now, and I think Iowa already did. Has basically it's insurance. It's quote unquote insurance, but you don't have the same protections that someone who's getting like commercial insurance or or a Medicare, Medicaid type system insurance. You have to basically appeal to the attorney general in the state. And it really is, there are very limited protections in terms of the appeal process for bills, et cetera, with these types of insurance, but they're cheaper. And the reality is a lot of people can afford them, but it isn't the insurance that you typically have today. And that is absolutely under a free market model that's something that someone could use. But the idea that somehow the free market system just creates a cheaper overall healthcare economy to me is just an asinine proposition. Like I don't see
that it's necessarily so much that it's. I think you kind of hit it earlier when yes, there's lots of folks argue that one of the distinct advantages of the current American healthcare system is that taxpayers don't bear the cost associated with medical insurance for every person. Mm-hmm. And some of those folks, not just libertarians, but there's folks that would argue that the tax dollars could be diverted towards education instead of funding a new healthcare system. I mean, it is a cost, whether Representative Ocasio-Cortez finds that puzzling or not. Mm-hmm. Yes, if $40 trillion is a concern. But there is an X factor there. We don't know how much cost would come down by providing it for all. And we would lower, obviously, the misuse of the emergency room system. But let's remember that under the status quo, Harvard Medical School, the Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, et cetera, et al., are the advances that they've made in medicine are in a big way because of the free market system. That's just the reality. Now, is there an inequity? Is there a gap? Absolutely. There's a staggering amount of folks that were uninsured specifically before the Affordable Care Act, hence the inability of the unified Republican Congress to procure its demise. Mm-hmm. Because they looked and they said, all right, what are we going to say to these 23 million folks that now have insurance because
of it? Because a majority of them probably
You couldn't have insurance with a pre-existing condition.
Exactly. And those, I'm sure, especially people with pre-existing conditions, the vast majority of them wanted health care. I mean, no sane individuals is ready to walk through life with like some debilitating chronic pre-existing condition. It's a fantasy world. But I apologize. Keep going.
No. I was offering that bit just simply to say not every piece of the status quo is bad, because one of the pieces, and we'll get to this later, I'll tell you what, continue.
Well,
I'll save my thoughts on the my own answers for that time.
Sure. So looking at, there's a couple different ways that people have discussed the free market system, and of course there would be. I don't think that the true free market system would be would exist without insurance. I think that's business. You have insurance. Yeah. Shit, you can get insurance for anything. However, if you have a true free market model, the protections that you have in the existing system become maybe a bit diluted or cease to exist, and that's a concern with the free market model. So the question is, well, what is the free market model? And I think your diehard libertarians or far right individuals, because that's typically who they are, see it almost as that sort of Taco Bell menu that you can walk into any clinic, any doctor's office, any hospital, and see what services you can get at what price, and then do a cross examination, go to a clinic where it's cheaper.
Well, let's remember, we do have a public option already in the sense, aside from the VA, which is, I mean, you can elect to participate or not, but I mean, what do you see Medicaid as? I mean, it's an entitlement program.
Yes. Yeah. No,
it does exist. It is based on, it's a social welfare program with eligibility that's clearly predicated upon income.
Yeah, exactly. And
so we do have a model upon which to expand. The question is whether or not the individual thinks that that's the right thing to do. That's where you and I start to diverge.
Well, so then the question would be, then for let's just go to the extreme and say that there shouldn't be that entitlement program. The question then is, well, then what do you do when that entitlement program is taken away? What do you do for those people? Again, healthcare, you have to look at healthcare, and I'm not pointing this at you, but just making the broader point that there is something in terms of like having access to care and taking care of yourself and having that preventative medicine that has a long-term return on investment.
Well, that's why it's virtually impossible. I know you want to, and I'll acquiesce, but it's virtually impossible to steer in the macro sense this away from, is it a right or not?
Sure.
That's why.
Yeah. And again, I look at health and maintaining your health and having access to affordable, good healthcare as a long-term ROI from a lot of debilitating chronic illnesses that you get. And when you strip that, away and you take that entitlement, or strip away the funding towards that, you put it on the states, which can't fund it the same way, with federal government assistance. When you strip that away, you lose that ROI, that long-term return on investment in terms of people maintaining their health. And so in the free market system, if you had it your way, not you, the proverbial you, had it your way, that entitlement was stripped away, you can reallocate that anywhere. You can reallocate that to, you wouldn't do it, but to education or to something else. But it still negates that return of investment in terms of your long-term health. So now,
why your earmarks should be completely unconstitutional. No, if it's prescribed for this by the House of Representatives, which per the Constitution, the Declaration, all our founding documents, the House has the power of the purse, mm-hmm. then you shouldn't be allowed to divert money away from something that it's already been appropriated for.
Sure.
I don't know, something about a wall and an emergency declaration is welcome to mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides the point.
So now we're in the world where that entitlement has been stripped away, and I suppose the states can do what they would like. However, there's now how do you fund that? You increase taxes within your own state in order to do that, or it just disappears completely, and now you're left with a huge percentage of the population that they have access to care, but they can't afford it, and that was the Bernie Sanders Ted Cruz debate. About access to care. So it doesn't matter what clinic you go into with the Taco Bell menu. It doesn't matter how much cheaper the doctor down the street is. It's still going to be unaffordable. And we're talking about even in the advent of complete subsidizing of medical school, that this still becomes incredibly expensive. The cost.
That leads into another problem, though, for even a public option, but specifically for universal health care, because you've got things like the IBD poll of physicians. I could send this to you if you want it for the show notes, but that 45% of doctors would consider leaving or taking early retirement if Congress passes the health care plan wanted by the Democrats. The poll also found that 65% of physicians opposed the White House, that was under President Obama, obviously, and the Democratic version of health care reform. I'm not saying those, who knows? Did they poll, how many doctors did they poll? Where? But you do have to admit that Americans, greed is good, right? So doctors, the young yuppies driving themselves into the medical or aspiring yuppies that are going into the medical field, there'd probably be less of a drive to do that.
Well, okay. So then you have to ask the question on the other side of that poll. Why? So why would it drive you to early retirement, or why would it drive you away from healthcare? Well, in the current situation of CMS or Medicare, Medicaid, the current system, the current way that they fund it, the way they reimburse. So there's the reimbursement rate for Medicare, Medicaid, CMS, as they would call it, is low. It's absolutely low, and it's made up by commercial insurance. So the insurance that, the overall point here is that if they're answering that question based on the current system we have, then yes, I agree that I think a lot of people would just get out of the game. But the reality is that whole CMS structure would have to be restructured. Like they would have to, because you don't just create a new model and then drive out those who deliver the care. I mean, it would, there would be a lot of negotiating going on.
Well, in fairness, there's another side of this real quick. The polling expert, he's worked for everybody from Real Clear Politics to ESPN, Nate Silver, who he actually criticized that very same poll for, and he has a name. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yep.
That's a relatively household name in terms of polling methodology, but he criticized the IBD-TIPP poll for what he called its unusual methodology and bias, and for the fact that it was incomplete when published as responses were still coming in. So there's that.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's a good, I think that's honest to mention.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, there's obviously a lot more to this. I do recognize the need for research and development, the need for driving healthcare. But, you know, I will point to some things. And not all of medicine is just the latest and greatest gadget, right? Because there's instruments that I've used in intensive care units that are decades old, or the technology is decades old, but they're effective. I mean, yes, maybe we might miss out on the new latest and greatest arterial monitor or something like that. But,
Did you ever use an ultrasound machine to do an IV?
Yeah, used them all the time.
I always did it just by feel, you know. But at the same time, I was fascinated with people because you're not watching your hands. I was always amazed at that.
Like, no, I did it probably 99% of the time in intensive care units because everyone was puffy and edematous and swollen, and so it was the easiest one shot, kind of one kill in order to get it done. So you don't, technology will still be there. Like, there'll still be a need for technology, but technology itself isn't what drives, maybe in the operating room, but technology isn't what is necessarily driving the best care, right? And there's plenty of what I argue drives really good care is really good research. And it is really, they're good studies that show us, like, hey, mortality rate decreases if we give this drug at this time. We're not creating a new drug. We're not creating a new technology. We're literally just finding out the efficacy of specific types of medications, specific types of therapies. So that in itself isn't the pharmaceutical company spending $1 billion on R&D. That's research. And I will tell listeners and people out there who don't know this, we in the United States use studies from European nations and Australia and New Zealand all the time. And what do they have? They have public options and they have full single payer systems. So in terms of technology, yes, I'm not going to argue that there could possibly be
nobody that can touch us in terms of technology.
Yeah, and maybe there's a slowing of the research and development for new technologies, but what doesn't slow...
The gap isn't as wide as I'm making it out to be, but it is kind of humorous to me when I hear the Jimmy Carters of the world praise Cuba's healthcare system. I'm going, yeah, well, all the technology you're touting...
But again, you have to look at, you have to start looking at other things too.
You're driving home the point as well. You showed us as someone subscribing to an RFK mentality of access. That's a big word for you.
Well, and so there's other things here too, right? So how do you measure the health of a healthcare system, or how do you measure the health of a country? And a lot of the time they do it by things like infant mortality rates. And quite frankly,
obesity comes to mind.
Yeah, and quite frankly, there's places in the South, namely Alabama, that have a higher infant mortality rate than some countries in the Middle East, and that's alarming, and that's crazy.
That's abysmal.
It is. It's horrible. But when someone, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but you could absolutely praise a Cuban healthcare system if, for example, they had
putting words in his mouth.
That I would equally praise a Cuban healthcare system or a public health service there that had 99% to 100% vaccination rate, meaning that they have an unbelievable...
Because they make you do it.
True. I get that. I mean,
I don't think you get a choice there. Just like you're going to play baseball, by God.
But if that belief kind of works in my ideology in terms of, like, if you want public service, then you have to be vaccinated to protect the herd immunity.
Well, I mean, there's to be said for, hey, if you want your kids to go to public school around other children, then they're going to be vaccinated.
Exactly. But if a country, and we'll take vaccinations out of it, but if there is a country that maybe on all markers is a worse country to live in than the United States, but are doing something positive with their healthcare system, I think there is room to acknowledge that.
If it works for them, great.
And so again,
I'm not crapping on Cuba here. Yeah. I thought it was funny to hear an American president say that when he was talking about the technology in the actual hospital and going, who do you think innovated that, Jimmy?
Yeah. So I think there's a small misconception in terms of, like, what makes this healthcare system great. And when you point to, like,
which one?
Our healthcare system, or seeing what we might lose out on. Some people are missing the great advances in medicine that, look, single payer countries have done and have done better than us. And
I feel there's an answer to that. But can continue. But I mean, I don't go the way of the libertarians here.
Yeah, and I know you don't. So that's why I said we wouldn't really have fundamental disagreements. On the free market system, and ultimately what the issues I have with the free market system are insurance companies that would be created that really serve very little value to the amount of money that you'd be paying into that insurance and what they actually cover, so you essentially could be losing money on it, and then there's the idea of the absolute lack of affordability. So there's another thing that I need to mention in terms of free market is that there's an idea that, hey, look, communities can come together. We'll just say, for example, a religious community, a church, and everyone pools resources for those who need care. And this is a real thing. I mean,
the Roman Catholic Church, for example, feeds more people, houses more people, and clothes more people than any private organization in the world.
Yes, but here's, and we'll, aside from the Catholic organization, which has a very
pretty stellar track rate when it comes to social aid,
that and a fairly endless capital, if you will,
of cash. Yeah.
Yes, so that's different from the Baptist Church down the road, or the Evangelical Church in rural Illinois.
Yeah, Catholics will speak to each other in a liquor store.
So the point is, even if you have that as an insurance policy, it still doesn't work when the real issues come up, or it does, and it exhausts all of the resources in that pool very quickly. And again, it's like when we say, well, we'll do it this way. This will be the way we fund it, whether it's through these communities. It's still insurance. It is still some form of insurance that you're paying into. You're going to have to pay to it. And this is where it comes back down to that fundamental idea of whether it's a right or not, or whether everyone needs to buy into a specific system. And I get the ideology comes down to the slippery slopes of overall federal intervention. But it's, again, it comes into this, like, cost risk analysis where we play these slippery slope games all the time. As you know, the next thing they're going to do is they're going to privatize telecom, or they're going to privatize this or that. And I guess it's
coming from fears about Senator Sanders, who argued for that in the 1970s, mm-hmm. as we talked about in the last podcast.
Yeah. And
that's where that's coming from, is because he didn't stop there. He went to the energy companies. I mean, it really went off the rails there.
Yeah. And I acknowledge that. I do. And I can play a slippery slope as well. I mean, we do it in a lot of things like free speech, et cetera. Right. However, when I look specifically at the health of a nation, the health, the mental health, the physical health, the overall return of investment you get for a healthy population and a less stressed out population for the amount of money that we're paying to healthcare, it just begs the question, what, even with the slippery slope, where is the risk to benefit ratio here?
And you say mental health. I got to be real here, and the interest of full disclosure to our international audience, they're probably right in thinking, well, when it comes to Americans and mental health, there's plenty of candidates, not enough patients. I mean, that's...
We're all
stark raving mad.
I was going to say, plenty of patients, not enough doctors. That's what you meant, right?
Well, I mean, just there's not enough participants, people getting mental health care.
Oh, yeah. And I think, quite frankly, like a single payer system, I think there's just more overall safeguards in terms of like what we can do if we're giving 300 million people the absolute buy-in, like their tax money now directly benefits them, that you can begin to look at how we make that successful, whether that is subsidizing medical school to an extent, or and then by doing that, you allow far more, because you have to build up the infrastructure, right? You have to have those preventative med docs, you have to have those family practice, you have to have the research, and that just lacks right now. Like it absolutely lacks. And anyone that is going into medicine today, the vast majority of them will specialize because they need to make that salary in order to pay off the debt that they've incurred. And it's sexier too. It certainly is. The trauma surgeon or the GI doc, it certainly sounds sexier than the family practice doc, but we will need those, and we need to make that attractive. And
the only way to do that then by proxy is single payer. That way they're all making relatively the same thing. I mean, obviously you'd get a raise with tenure, but then there would be an incentive to be a general practitioner, correct?
Yeah, there would be. And I mean,
that's the mindset. Yes. I'm not arguing that.
Yeah, right. Subsidizing medical school and single payer don't necessarily go together. I'm using it as something you would probably
have to do something, though, in order to get folks, in order to get, under your proposal, in order to get folks that are going to medical school to move to a rural place, wherever, in Idaho, Alabama, Georgia, wherever, there would have to be some sort of subsidy to do that. Otherwise, who's going to?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, again, the debt incurred from medical school, it's touched in every degree. I mean, the reason medical school obviously is so damn expensive is the amount of time you have to give to it. So you literally can't do anything else. In other degrees, you can, and you can offset the cost of education a bit. And then just the length of time that you're actually going to school and the involvement that you have. And that's where that debt really racks up. But every person going to any sort of public university or private university feels the pinch of debt. And I'm certainly not advocating for complete subsidized or free education. But in the terms of if I am proposing a single payer system, then I also have to be realistic about those people that provide that care.
The education somehow.
It has to. And again,
to make it work.
Yeah. And again, that I believe in the overall expenditure, if you will, of the entire system in terms of the single payer system and those who then will provide the care to the single payer system. I think that overall cost is kind of a drop in the bucket. It certainly would be a very costly upfront, expenditure, but really is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, there's no way around that. Obviously, I mean, even Representative Ocasio-Cortez acknowledged that the, she didn't use the word, but the cost would be exorbitant.
It would be, again.
So is Forever War.
Yeah, okay, exactly. I mean, that's, ugh, but yeah.
Sure.
And again, it's I wanted to take the time on this episode to specifically talk about that free market system. And I know we haven't spent the entire time talking about it, but the real concerns that I do have with that free market system. And I would love if there's any
liberty. This is what's called rational discourse,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah. And if, hey, look,
we're
if there's.
We're talking through it.
If there is any libertarian out there that happens to listen to the show, I couldn't imagine there's a whole lot. Unless they just want to be.
For them, they have very little to say about government.
Exactly.
Other than no.
Yeah, exactly. So, or if anyone has a specific argument for a free market system, I would love to hear it. And
well, maybe we should get my brother on here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I guess the free market system to me is very theoretical. It's very romantic in terms of like the lack of federal government or government involvement at all. However, of all the models, of all the models that we currently have and we are using in this healthcare system that we have in the United States, the free market.
I love those women. I didn't use those models.
That free market model, I think, just doesn't carry the same amount of weight and would be successful without utterly destroying the access to care, like actual access of using that the healthcare market itself. You could stand
remember, good health is merely the slowest possible rate you can die.
Oh, there we go. Well, you just negated all of my all my argument completely. It's
the goodwill. Yeah, it's just by being snarky, though. But now the master of snark, though, George Carlin, I think he had a great joke. He said, "Isn't it a bit unnerving that doctors call what they do practice?"
Yeah. Well, on
he had a singular wit, man. I missed.
Oh man. Well, on that joke.
I'm sorry.
No, on that joke, we are running at 35 minutes, and I've got to get up and go to work tomorrow because this is wonderful, but it is late. And as always, my friend, it's great to have this discourse with you and these conversations, and I truly appreciate it.
It really is great to do this because we're able to show that, hey, we can, even though there wasn't as much stark disagreement this time, we'll be back, folks. We've had plenty of it, but we're able to, I mean, I don't know, remain civil, and the magazine itself as a whole is going to be 3 years old next month. The podcast is a year and a half old, but we've been doing this as friends and originally fellow service members for almost 8 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Took us a year and a half to finally mold it to be at least airwaves worthy, but it certainly has been a good ride.
Well, I'd say we're just now getting warmed up.
Indeed, indeed. So, well, as always, my friend, it's an honor and a pleasure, and until next time.
Au revoir.